Talking about Kickstarter. Kickstarter, you know, has a lot of successes, a lot of stuff, a lot of projects have raised money on Kickstarter, but not all of them can meet their fundraising goal. Like this guy.
Hello, Kickstarter. It's me, musical storyteller Charles Johnson. This summer, I'm going to put on a big solo show. It's going to have music. It's going to have storytelling. Going to have a little bit of sword fighting. Maybe even some magic. Who knows? It's going to be a great big extravaganza.
So, this podcast is going to have a little bit of... Well, no sword fighting. You know what, though? It could have had sword fighting if we had any of those toothpicks from back in the day. Do you remember those? The toothpicks that had the sword handle?
Yes.
They're plastic.
Yeah, and you get them in, like, fruit and, like, tropical drinks.
Exactly.
They were awesome.
You know... I don't know if they have those anymore. They might still be around somewhere. I haven't seen, you know, stuff on Kickstarter that I really feel like my funding would be the critical ingredient. Do you know what I mean? There's some things that are lost causes and hopeless and stupid. And then there's some things that are these runaway successes and they get picked up. I mean, that's the ones I hear about. I hear that, like, I think the Ollie Clip, which is one of the lenses that is available for the iPhone, a competitor to the one I have from Photo Jojo, which is a cool one, but there's that Ollie Clip one, which is another entrant in that, you know, iPhone lens category, and I think they started on Kickstarter. I know that there's always some sort of iPod watch type project that's being talked about, but I think on the other hand, you know. There's a lot of stuff being funded that isn't going to meet its goals, and there's certainly a lot of stuff that seems kind of stupid to me. Mm-hmm. What have you seen on Kickstarter that you like, or you think is dumb?
You know, I have only seen the what went wrong on Kickstarter, but... I did have a friend's band on Indiegogo, I think, and I helped fund, well, actually, he didn't reach his funding goal, but he's still paying out people with what they bought the packages for, you know.
So he made a promise if you fund them to a certain amount, they'll do something, and they're following through.
You know, I think the deal, like, there was no intention. I thought maybe they would just return the money, but I think instead they kept it, and they're sending me, like, a download of their song. I have a code for that and some other things that I, oh, yeah, your song. I got to send them three ideas of a song, and they're going to record it.
So Indiegogo, apparently, based on what you're telling me, allows projects that don't meet their quote-unquote goal to still get the funding, whereas I think Kickstarter is a... It is a all or nothing proposition, so you have to meet. I think you can get above, you can get more, but you have to at least take in the amount that you set as your goal. You know, if I'm not mistaken, I think the attempt to come up with a decentralized Facebook clone was maybe the early headline story about Kickstarter. Do you remember what that thing is called?
Don't.
Yeah. I don't know. So that I think that thing is still going on, but obviously there's still a lot of people that are using Facebook. So I had for this podcast I have a top 25 list. So you can see that at the show notes at djmcloud.com. Look for podcast 33. The 25 apps are for five different categories, and basically most of these apps have been talked about on previous episodes, but what I'm going to do with Jessica's help is go through and either briefly mention the app and also say what previous podcast it was on, or maybe get into a little more in-depth discussion, I guess, whatever, however things lead. So before I get to that, I want to also take a short break here for some of the music that Jessica and I are working on our Niner 2 album. And you can find out more about our music. Go to blogs.sf3am.com/Niner. Pacific Shores. So when we have our new album ready, we'll post it on the website. So you'll have to check that out, and you can see a link to the band site and a link to all the stuff we're talking about, including the apps coming up in the show notes. This is the DJMCloud.com podcast number 33 with me, Daniel J. McKeown. And with Jessica.
Hi, everybody.
Okay, well, now we are going to start the app roundup. This is 25 apps, and I'm going to start in the photography category. So, Pro Camera, of course, I've talked about Pro Camera before. This is a good camera replacement app. You can use this to take photos, review photos, also take video, and they've also added a QR code scanner. But it sounds like it does have a lot of features, but it's one of those apps that does the major stuff well. It isn't just about a list of features, and there are a number of popular camera replacement apps. Camera Plus is one that a lot of people use. My personal choice is for Pro Camera in a lot of situations, and I'll say this: they have a very good camera mode, and their video mode works very well. They had to add new features when the iPhone 4 gave way to the iPhone 4S, but the HD video recording with it is excellent, and the photography with it is excellent. I talked about it on podcast episodes number 4 and number 20, so I probably went a little more in depth there. Number 2 is 645 Pro. This is one of those apps that's really starting to make an impact. It's I think these days, very recently, that Rare thing, like a new camera app that has kind of a new take on things. Although there have been apps that have had elements of what they do, I think it's definitely has a lot of cool features put together in one place. You've seen me use 645 Pro a little, right? Like, it has a lot of indicators on the screen. So, a few previous apps, it sort of imitates the interface of a point and shoot, but I think they do a good job. They have auto exposure lock, autofocus lock buttons. They have the ability to turn a grid on and off on the preview. It has what they call like a kind of a pressure sensitive, like a, you know, a two stage shutter button, and it will take photos that are in TIFF format. So you can set it to take JPEG only or JPEG and TIFF, and then you have to go through iTunes to get it. But I think that it's really cool. It's sort of an equivalent to RAW photos for your iPhone, and I like it. I think that it's one of those photo apps that I've been reaching for a lot. Now, the same app maker makes one called 6x7, which is a very cool, very simplistic app. And I think what they're doing is they're building up that, you know, they took what they learned from that app and another one, 6x6, and kind of expanding what it can mean to have a iOS camera app.
Yeah, you know, I'm really excited about, you know, the rest of the apps on this list. And I just think in general, photography has exploded on the iPhone and has so many great advancements, even faster than sort of, you know, hard body cameras, with technology and filters and apps and just different ways to manipulate from old school to new school and UI tweaks. It's amazing. It's great for photographers. So, you know, check out these apps. They're, you know, they're great for new photographers and seasoned photographers.
Yeah, I would agree. And the 645 Pro, I discussed on the previous episode, number 32. Now, Adobe Idea is number 3 on this list of photography apps. It's something that I think, Jessica, you have used considerably. Now, you have it on your iPad as well, but I've used it on the iPhone. It's a legitimate iPhone app because I tend to talk mainly about iPhone apps because I'm an iPhone and Mac user, but I don't have my own iPad. But I occasionally use yours, but I think you're either way, I think this is the kind of app that still works on the iPhone, although obviously it might be a little better on the iPad. But could you tell us a little bit about Adobe Ideas?
It's just a really great way to express yourself. You know, it's really just easy to draw.
So it's like a sketching app.
Yeah.
And it has like different brushes and different colors. I think that it's something that, in the hands of someone creative like you, I've seen really cool, drawings and paintings. Some of the stuff you do on it has, and they have different looks. Like some of them look kind of like sketches. Some of them look kind of like, sort of like paintings. And
yeah. No, it's fun. I was using another app and they lock you down with color and brush, but this one you get a lot of colors and you can tap to open up a wide rainbow of colors. You can play around with the thicknesses of the lines, and it's fun. It's just fun to draw, you know, and sketch and color and paint, and you could probably use it for ideas, but I think there's other apps like Writeboard apps and shared, you know, sort of Writeboard communication apps that are probably better designed for that. This is, I think, just really for fun and art and entertainment.
Creativity.
Yeah, creativity.
Okay, and now that app we originally discussed in podcast episode number 10. The number 4 on the list is GridLens. Now, GridLens is one of many diptych apps that allow you to put a number of different photos in the same frame. Now, GridLens, they're deal, I guess, is that they have rectangular frames. It isn't. It does allow you to make your own, but they're all in rectangular shapes. So it has a, you know, that grid kind of look to it. It was an early app to allow of this type to allow you to take pictures and just have the grid lines going through them, but use the same photo for it. And I like it. It's a good simple app to use for photos that you're sharing. I think a lot of you. I think I've seen more people on Instagram using Diptych style apps, and I know there's a number of different apps that have those features, including Diptych, PicFrame, and a number of other ones. But I think if you're looking for one in that area and you'd like a nice simple app that allows you to kind of arrange, one or multiple good photos together, but have a very simple look, I think GridLens is a good move. And you can hear us talk about it originally in episode number 21. So the next app is iPhoto for iOS. iPhoto for iOS is something that came out with some fanfare like a few months ago at an Apple event. And I think that, you know, what this does, this doesn't replace the basic Photos app on the iPhone, but what it does is it's an addition to it, and it allows you to browse your photos. It allows you to do some editing. The editing tools are designed to be intuitive, but there aren't a lot of like tooltip directions, and there aren't a lot of words on it. It's like these symbols and stuff. So you have to figure out what, you know, what adjust brightness is, what adjust contrast is, and different things. But then it also has filter tools, and it also has some brush tools, so you can do some. A lot of the effects that you would do on apps like GridLens, where you can do tilt shift effects, you can do on that. Apps that are filtering apps, it goes into that territory a little bit, and it does some of the stuff that people might do on Adobe Photoshop Express or other apps like that, like photo adjustments. I think that, you know, it's a reasonably priced app. I think it's $5, but I think that it's a good tool to have for your photos on the iPhone, and it does complete the iLife series on the iOS platform. So there's the next category of iPhone apps is gaming. Now, I have a list. There's a lot of popular games out there. Here's my list. Number one, Grand Theft Auto 3. We originally talked about this on episode number 19. I think I said a lot of stuff about it then. So, I just say that, you know, this is one of those games. It's a PlayStation 2 game originally that's now on, you know, the iOS platform. It's an outstanding game.
Yeah, it's just... right there on the platform. The quality is there, the colors, the storyline. Yeah, it's great.
So that's a great game. So then there's Snail Domino. Snail Domino, I guess you would call sort of a physics puzzle game, but it has like cool animation. It has like mellow music. So it's one of those simple games that doesn't have a lot to it, but I had a good time playing through some of the levels. The third game, I talked about Snail Domino in episode 13 originally. Minecraft PE is, Minecraft Pocket Edition is another game I've discussed. I talked about it on episode 28, but it's one of those world builder type games, and it's gotten really popular on other like desktop platforms. But they've added features, and it has a lot of the features of the desktop versions now, and it's a cool game if you like, you know, building virtual stuff. It has simplistic graphics like we were talking about, but it can be a fun game if it's that type of thing that you like. Number four on gaming, Need for Speed Hot Pursuit. I talked about that in episode 5, but you know, it's been around a while, but this is a pretty good port of a racing game. You get good graphics. It has that tilt steering kind of style that's pretty common in iOS racing games. It's not the quite the same experience that you might get as a at a you know, PS Vita racing game, but it's still, it's, you know, it's cool for the iPhone. And then number five, I have two games. I have Tap to Flab, which was discussed in episode 4, and I have Tiny Wings, which is discussed in episode 5. Which of those games do you like?
I like Tap to Flab.
So Tap to Flab, you want to stay in the air, and Tiny Wings, you do too, right? But the way, but the pressing of the screen you do is to get the bird to flap around the obstacles but stay in the air and Tap to Flap, whereas it's to launch the character in Tiny Wings.
Yeah. They're both fun, you know, and if they're both featuring birds or flying things, you know, that's cool.
Yeah, those are good games, and a lot of people like the Angry Birds and Cut the Rope and Fruit Ninja and all those like mega hit games, and I've played all those games too. So you know, I think like definitely not a platform where you have to go looking that hard for the for the gaming you know, apps. Now, you know, the photography, I think you'd have to dig to find some of the ones we mentioned, you know, some of the ones that are popular maybe aren't quite as good or, you know, maybe, it will, or just aren't, you know, the ones that we're talking about. Now, gaming, you know, big category. Now, reading, this is a little bit of a specialized category, but this is growing and this is very, very cool to consider because you want to think about, well, reading on your iPhone, that's something, especially with the quality of the screen. The iPhone 4 and 4S have the Retina screen display, and it is really good for reading, right? So it's like, okay, what? And a lot of these apps have, you know, equivalents on the iPad anyway. So this is something, these are all worth looking into for consuming content, for reading. Now, one of them is Pocket. It used to be called, until recently, Read It Later. This is a tool for saving articles and then reading them later on the app or on their website. So it has the ability to save the article so you can read it offline or you can read it later, on the website, in the app. You know, it claims to be able to handle video and audio pretty well. I think it's still sort of a challenge to be able to do that, right? But basically, it'll take, you know, if you're using the bookmarklet on Safari, you can press the bookmarklet when you're on an article, and it'll save that article, and then you can read it on the app or on the website. So I think it's one of those apps that, you know, people at first maybe they're not sure if they want it, but I think when you look at a lot of people's workflow, a lot of people look at their workflow with reading, they're going to realize that they either have huge browsers full of tabs that they either never read or have to go through at some point, or just have like kind of go away when the machine gets turned off. And now a lot of times the tabs restore, so it's there again. But people will have tabs open for even weeks at a time sometimes, right? Or people will read part of an article. They'll read in an RSS reader. But these stuff, like something like Pocket, it'll plug into your RSS reader. So you can save the articles and go through them, because I think there's that pattern where some people are more, like, in some situations people are more grazing. They're getting the articles. They're gathering them. They're hunting and gathering the articles. And then later they're going to sit down and read them, you know, and consume them. So I think that, you know, when you're talking about, we're talking about our RSS reader, so that goes right to the next one. So Pocket was mentioned in episode 32. Now the next one, number two, is Reader, R-E-E-D-E-R. This is an app that, actually there's different versions for iPad, iPhone, and for Mac, but this is a client for Google Reader. So you can have RSS feeds from sites that you like, whether it's blogs or websites or whatever, as long as they have a content feed that can go into Google Reader. You put them in Google Reader, and then this gives you all the latest articles from Google Reader, so you can consume them, either go through them and see which ones you want to read later, or go through and look at them right now. And, you know, I think that when you take the time to decide what sources you're interested in, follow the RSS feeds, and then use an app like this, it gives you the ability to say, you know, well, I want to read now. You don't have to think about what site you go to, who has the best summary of the news, who has the best place to start. The place to start is this will Apple deliver you the latest news within a few minutes, really, just coming over the wire from all your favorite websites. So definitely worth taking the time to put those RSS feeds in Google Reader and then use the app. And I originally talked about it in episode 11. So the next app, number three, is the Kindle. I originally talked about it in episode 28. May have talked about it in other ones, too. This is the app you can use to read Amazon Kindle books. You know, a lot of people are reading those. Some people have a Kindle, but you don't have to. Just, you know, you can just get the Kindle book and read it on your iPhone. So the next app is Flipboard. They have different versions for Flipboard. It was originally discussed in episode number 18. Flipboard has different versions. The version for the iPhone and the version for the iPad are different. It was originally designed for the iPad. And that app, I know you've used.
Mm-hmm.
And then they designed a new version for the iPhone. That's the one I've used. And they're different. But I like the iPhone version. What do you think of Flipboard?
I think they did a good job of figuring out, you know, what to display, you know, which photos are bigger. They had that idea, and then I think soon after, you know, Facebook came out with their timeline, and, you know, you have that ability to kind of change the size of photos, make them bigger, make them more important. So there's this dynamic difference to your feed, because before it was everything was the same size, everything was, you know, kind of boring, and you know, Flipboard, it's kind of outside the box. Boxes are different sizes. You know, they have smaller comments on the right. So it's kind of, and it definitely benefits photos and videos, which, you know, to me shows a big trend that that's the way things are going. And I've heard a lot of people in the industry say that. It's photos and videos, photos and videos.
Yeah, and so Flipboard is a more visual way to consume content from sites you already use, right? Like like Facebook, Twitter, Google Reader, and news channels that they run, right? So you can consume this content like you're talking about with photos and videos in a more visual type way. So it's a very iOS, very tablet and phone era news consumption app, right?
Right.
All right. Well, that leads us to reading app number five. That's Tweetbot. It was originally discussed in episode number 10. Tweetbot is a Twitter client, but, you know, it's got some nice features. It has, like, unique sounds that it makes. It has the ability now to mute people.
Nice.
So you don't have to unfollow them. You can just mute them and then they won't show up on your Tweetbot timeline. You know, it plugs into Pocket, so you can read articles later that are linked to on Twitter. It has some nice... you know, some nice design touches. The official Twitter app is also pretty good these days, I think. There's a lot of different options out there, but yeah, I like Tweetbot. Well, that's our first three. We've gone through 15.
Wow.
Yeah, we've really gone through some apps. So I just want to remind people you can see the links to the actual apps page on iTunes and stuff like that. If you go to the show notes at djmcloud.com and just search for podcast 33. Now we're going to go on to the writing section. And this section, we have five apps that are all good for putting text into a into your iPhone. Now I think this is one of those topics that is very geek centric. Now everybody has a use for text for something like shopping lists or emails to friends and family or to, you know, for whatever reason, but geeks often like text because obviously it's what code is made out of, and it's also it also can be used to represent data in a lot of different ways. And text editors are something that that a lot of geeks really like, and so you know iOS has had to catch up in the text editing department. I remember when I when I had an early Palm device, I remember like thinking how difficult it was to kind of transfer text, you know, notes you had made. And that was one of the things I really wanted to work well is, A, have it be able to take in data that I'm giving it in something more efficient than that, I guess, graffiti system. But then also the ability to move the text around. You know, these days, it's amazing what you can do, right? So you have tools that allow you to sync data in the background. So when you write text on your iPhone, it can be available to you on other devices easily. And the first app that's in that category is Evernote. So Evernote is a note-taking app. They have a service, a syncing service. So basically, you get an account, and when you download the app for Mac and the version for iPhone, or I think they have a Windows version. You can download for a lot of different platforms, and when you write a note into one and sync it, the note will be available in all those different apps, right?
And I think that's one of the greatest things about that app, you know, was they're really starting to get away from, you know, this is only for an iPhone, you can't do this here, you know, just really connecting you and having your information on any device.
Yeah.
Whenever you want it, whenever you want it.
Right, and you say information because it isn't just text. It can, mm-hmm. Evernote can also handle photos and stuff, which is a nice extra feature. Now, the Evernote was originally discussed in episode number 10. Now, number two, I'm talking about Byword here. Now, this was originally discussed in episode number 30. And Byword is a markdown and text editor, and it allows you to sync using iCloud or Dropbox. So you can have your data backing up and available using either of those services, and it's good. I've been using it to take notes that I want to have available directly, you know, on my computer through Dropbox. So I've been using it to sync through Dropbox. It works really well. And then another text editor that syncs through Dropbox is Nebulous Notes. This is one that is very good for editing plain text. I have used this one to actually edit my test server. So if I want to make a really quick edit of some PHP code I'm working on, or if I'm working on a WordPress theme, I have a test server that I run on my Mac laptop. And I just use a MAMP server, so it runs off of code on the Mac's hard drive, so I have that accessible through Dropbox. So I can just get on Nebulous Notes and actually edit code that can go that'll go right, you know, live to my Mac through the on the MAMP server. So I think that it's a very cool tool for just, you know, for editing plain text. Now the fourth app in the writing category is Pages. Pages is an app that is from Apple that's a word processor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, you know, it's very Apple. You know, if you like their style and how they create your user experience, just imagine that in a Word document type of setting.
Right, and the files that it's going to export by default is going to be like an Apple Pages document, a PDF, or a Word document. So it's more in the word processor category than the text editor category. But of course, you know, in a lot of ways, it's in the same broader, you know, area, and it's definitely worth a mention. It's it's one of those that allows a lot more formatting. These other ones are like Evernote somewhere in between, but those other Byword and Nebulous Notes are really good for basic text, but the Pages is going to be good for formatted documents, and it's pretty impressive if you really are willing to work with it, right? The amount of formatting can be done just on the iPhone. And then there's app number four. I'm sorry, this is actually app number five. is Drafts. Drafts is a pretty cool app. You know, I was talking to you about how I want to find an app, and I felt like there's got to be an app that does this, that allows you to start writing a tweet and then decide whether the tweet goes to Evernote or goes to Twitter or both. Because sometimes you start writing a tweet and maybe it's like you just go on a long time and you want to save it, or maybe for whatever reason you don't want to post it to Twitter, but you can save it. Well, that's like what this app really does. Now, what it actually will do is it'll give you the option of sending it to Twitter, or you can also save it as a text file on Dropbox. So, I mean, it basically gets the job done. And I think this is something that does like an interesting, you know, little job, you know, in that area too. So I would say those five, you know, they give you, they each have a slightly different niche that I think they're going to offer you.
Yes, they do.
Well, we're down to five more apps.
Last five.
Yeah, unless you're going to throw any in the, on the pile.
I may do, or I may save it for my top 25.
Oh yeah, for sure. You know, these lists are very individual.
Yeah, I think, yeah, like, this is your list, and, you know, I'm chiming in with the apps I've tried out, but I think this is really your cool list.
Oh, okay, that's good, we'll go on get to the five in the etc. category. So, you know, I mean, not all these fit into one of those previous categories, but they're worth mentioning. One of them is 8mm vintage camera. Now, we've talked about some different 8mm simulator apps. You know, there's these apps that you can use the iPhone. It's taking video, but it is filtering the video to give it the effect of having been taken with an 8mm film camera.
So cool.
Yeah, it's very cool that you can get these retro effects on different camera apps, and it's very accessible. Now, 8mm vintage camera is my favorite. It allows some pretty high resolution recording. It has a simple group of good filters. I think the 60s one is my favorite, but there's a number of different ones. And it allows you to take the clips, and if you go to the settings and set it up that way, have it save right to the camera roll. So then you can have that accessible whether you want to edit it with an app on your iPhone or download it to your desktop computer and edit it from there. There's other entrants in the category. There was one called the iSuper 8, which you know has some nice features, but there's also one that was actually connected to the movie Super 8.
Right, that's right.
And that one, it has its own built-in editor, and it has some cool filters. But I guess I like the overall, the 8mm vintage camera one is my favorite of those. So you know, it's a category with multiple entrants, and you could try them all if you're really into it. I think, you know, there's some discussion of that on episode 4. So the next one is G Music. It's a Google Music client. I don't think I had brought it up. I may, you know, I mentioned Google Music briefly, but you know, you can upload your MP3s and then get access to any music you buy in the Google Play Store through Google Music. Now, what about listening to it on your iPhone? Well, I mean, you know, what this allows you to do is this allows you to stream anything in your Google Music collection on your iPhone. So it is cool, especially if you have good connectivity, as a tool for just getting access to your whole music collection. So, you know, especially if you put all your MP3s on Google Music. So I think, you know, it's worth checking out if you're using that service. And it is a free service. The app, I think, you know, costs a couple bucks. The number three entrant in the etc. category is actually two different apps. Now, one is iMovie for iOS, and the other one is Videolicious. Now, iMovie for iOS is the one for the more serious video editor. This is the one where, okay, I have some clips on my iPhone photo roll. I want to tell a cool story. I want to make a cool video, and I know what order I want to put it in, and I know what transitions I want to use, and, you know, it has simple features, but it's very cool. You can edit HD video on your phone.
Yeah, that's great.
I know that some people use the iPad versions of those, I've been doing it on the iPhone, and it is very cool. Now, Videolicious is an app that is more of a fun, oriented video app. It allows you to kind of give it some clips, pick some music, and it edits the clips together. It kind of makes a story out of it. It's a pretty fun tool. Now, iMovie is a few bucks. Videolicious is free. Videolicious appends a little like logo at the end and a fade out. I mean, if you had some like Final Cut Pro, you could just chop it out at the end if you really wanted and still use the video it makes. But it's a free app, and it's cool, I think, for just making kind of, fun, you know, movies with a few clips put together. I think there's somewhere in between. I think even though iMovie makes video editing very accessible, I do think that maybe Apple could learn a little bit, put a little bit of AI as an optional, a completely optional feature, make the iOS iMovie experience that much more distinctive by having some AI features that suggest putting clips in an order or put clips in a certain order, but then let you confirm it and then let you, you know what I mean? Like somewhere in between these two.
Mm-hmm.
So really the main reason I mentioned Videolicious, because it kind of points the way toward, if you didn't go that far, but went a little ways in terms of letting some AI optionally build the movie for you.
Right.
It might come up with some intriguing results, and that does sound like something Apple might do, right? If, to make it more user friendly, but I don't know. It just, you know, there are other apps that, you know, that do that. So number four is the app in the etc. category. Not a big deal, just Flashlight, the iForce software one. That episode number 14, if you have an iPhone 4 or iPhone 4S, they have a powerful LED that can be used as a pretty effective flashlight. And it really does work, like, for shining a decent amount of light, in certain situations.
It's totally worth it. Get it. You know, it's like Swiss Army knife kind of a deal. Like, what else? You know, you can use the camera as a mirror, and now you can get an app and use the light as a flashlight. Like, this phone is more than a phone. It's really cool with all these apps.
Yeah. One more app I'm going to mention in the etc. category, and that's Dolphin Browser. This is one of those apps. It's another browser that's available now. A lot of the basic web rendering technology is going to be the same, in Safari on iOS and other browsers on iOS. But they allow some different interface ideas, and they allow, you know, some different options. So there's I've talked about Atomic Web and Mercury Browser. They're both pretty cool. There's Opera Mini. But I think that of the alternative browsers I've tried, Dolphin is pretty cool. I think it's pretty popular on Android. And what it actually does is it looks like Chrome, sort of, you know, and it's got the Unibar kind of design, and it's really not a bad browser to have as an extra browser. They've changed it a bit recently though, so you could check it out and see what you think of it. Well, I uh, think that that does the whole app that does the that takes us through the top 25 apps. So you know, there's a lot of episodes where we've mentioned apps before, but I think this one really takes you through and gives you a good summary of a lot of different apps that I've found over the last couple of years. Now we're going to have a quick break, and we'll be right back. The Fukushima Daiichi plant in Japan continues to leak huge amounts of radiation. There's this article in the New York Times that linked to in the show notes that they're saying Japan to nationalize Fukushima utility. So Tokyo Electric Power is being nationalized, this $12.5 billion plan. The Japanese government is apparently being forced to take on the financial risk of the Fukushima plant because, as they now admit, the plant had multiple meltdowns and is still in apparently a state of uncontrollable radiation leaks. They're using water to try to cool it down. That water is being dumped in the Pacific Ocean. They're right on the jet stream. They're detecting high radiation levels in the West Coast and even into the U.S. I think nuclear power is facing a reckoning. I mean, this isn't by chance that people are looking at the real cost of nuclear power. And there's recently an election in France, and François Hollande won over Nicolas Sarkozy, and there were many issues, and Sarkozy was a terrible president, but one of the winning issues was reducing France's dependence on nuclear energy. Now, France, if some people, might remember, was touted during certainly during the George W. Bush era, when they were really trying to push new nuclear construction, as a provided for country in terms of energy, because they got supposedly 3/4 of their power from nuclear. Now it's a popular issue in France to get rid of that, or to reduce that. Germany announced they're shutting down all their nuclear plants. Japan doesn't seem, I think they've been shutting down all their nuclear plants, and they don't seem to be getting, they have enough trouble getting control of the Fukushima Daiichi reactors, multiple of which are still having many problems. But I think that we're seeing overall like a worldwide backlash against nuclear. What do you think of that?
I think it's about time. You know, I think a lot of people with modern thinking know how dangerous and volatile nuclear power is. And we have to stop listening to the bullshit and the lies about different kinds of energy and power and really start understanding, the effects of choosing.
Well, lies is the right word, because we hear about nuclear energy being cheap. That's not true. When you hear about it being safe, that's obviously not true. You hear these myths repeated in the media, and nuclear power is not inexpensive, and it is not a sound technique for generating power. We have a short break here, and we'll be right back. You're listening to the DJMCloud.com podcast. episode number 33, recorded May 11th, 2012. Well, there's only two more stories. One of them is about dinosaurs, and well, there's an article in Ars Technica, and you can find it in the show notes at djmcloud.com. They have a study that they talk about from a journal called Current Biology. Now, they take estimates of how dinosaurs, herbivores, were really big, and a lot of them lived in a small area. Apparently, there were a lot of plants to feed on. And then the dinosaurs burped, and they put so much methane in the atmosphere, according to this estimate, that they created a greenhouse effect and caused global warming with their burps. Now, maybe I don't have it quite right. You can look at the article and decide for yourself if I'm interpreting it right. But that's certainly the way that it appears.
I don't know, I can't believe it.
Another unbelievable story. Okay, well, I also wanted to mention,
My name is Henrietta, and I'm a stand-up comedian right here in L.A., and that's actually my nighttime job. My daytime job is getting fired from day jobs. I got fired from one job for telling dating jokes. So HR calls me and says, Miss Conrad, did you or did you not say that you have a banner hanging on the outside of your house that says if you were banging Henrietta, you'd be home by now?
This is another Kickstarter project that didn't make it.
I have to tell it.
She just had to tell it.
No business. Like show business.
Oh, no.
But ever since I was a little girl, I wanted to come here to Hollywood. And here I am. I wanted to be in show business. Instead, I married a rabbi. People always ask me, is that true? Were you really married to a rabbi? No, I just say it to seem more glamorous.
Is that uncomfortable?
This was a story that Henrietta was meant to tell. It seems to ooze from the depths of her life. She poured every ounce of energy into the performance, and the audience was in tears from laughter.
It's like an audio on.
You see, the rabbi was Orthodox, so we had to have sex through a hole in the sheet. Yeah, through a hole in the sheet. That's right, but I sewed up the hole. And that's what I'm looking to do now, to do a six-week run at a local theater here in L.A., and then make a DVD of it, and then create a buzz. You know what a buzz is, right? Like people talk about it, and then suddenly someone comes in and sees you, and boom, you've made a movie, and you get an Oscar, and okay, I'm getting a little ahead of myself. Maybe it'll be on Broadway. It'll be like a musical, Henrietta on Broadway. It's a musical. Maybe I'll get a sitcom. I arrive in L.A. I'm 47, going on 17. I am way beyond cougar. I'm a saber-toothed tiger. I checked the want ads, and there wasn't any call for a horny ex-wife of a rabbi.
I'm wincing right now.
Well, she didn't make her fundraising goal. There's some of this, like, this, she put the video together, apparently, for her Kickstarter page. It is, is excellent, like, crazy-ass video that, like, you know, the found footage kind of people, like, Everything is Terrible, have to go and cobble stuff together. Here she is just putting it out there. Like, I gotta admit, I was a skeptic before, but I think Kickstarter is pretty amazing now.
Mm-hmm.
check the website at pacificpelican.us and check out Jessica's website at jessica.sf3am.com. And you can subscribe to the podcast at djmcloud.com.